Now, Social Democrats Dublin Bay North councillor Kian O'Callaghan, he's called for a national remediation fund for residents and homeowners affected by structural defects in apartments built during the last economic boom. And speaking of which, I am joined by Councillor O'Callaghan himself, and he's going to tell us more about it. Good morning, Kian, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for having me on.
No, you're most welcome. First of all, Kian, are you referring to the specific block of apartments in Ballygriffin or to a number of building structures in Dublin that were built during the Celtic Tiger?
No, you're referring to a number of structures. This is a problem, and it's not just in Dublin. It's countrywide, so there is. And it tends to affect, you know, apartments or those kind of higher density builds more, but there's a number of developments that were built during the kind of Celtic Tiger boom years that weren't built properly at all, and the residents and the homeowners in those areas are struggling to cope with the remediation works that they know need to take place, particularly with respect to kind of, you know, serious issues like fire safety. Now, the government previously, in terms of when pyrite defects occurred, and a lot of those came to light in our local area first. The government did assist there, and they set up, after a while, they set up a national pyrite remediation scheme to help homeowners. And that was for situations where the developer effectively was gone out of the picture, or where the insurance companies, the latent defects insurance companies weren't paying out. So we do have a big problem in the country that it can take a number of years often for defects to emerge. And by the time they emerge, often the developer can be off the hook in terms of the statute of limitations. That's something I think needs to be changed so that we're not left with this problem. And also that, one of the main insurance companies that covers structural latent defects emerging had so many kind of get-out clauses in their policies. Their policies effectively say we'll cover defects if it was built properly. So if it's not built properly, they've a sufficient get-out clause not to pay out. So it leaves a lot of people in the lurch. And I do think, given that the homeowners and the residents, this is no fault of their own. They bought in good faith, albeit in a kind of system that doesn't regulate and inspect construction properly. They shouldn't be left completely on the lurch to fend for this themselves. So I do think that the government has a role here to assist them.
Very restrictive insurance policy. Have they always been like that?
There's a couple of companies that do it, but there's the main provider. It's not the homeowner that picks the insurance for latent defects. It's the builder, and the builder is going to go for the lowest cover. Some of the builders are going to go for the lowest cover that they can get away with. And that's what's happening in this situation.
Yeah, so, that was probably due to the high cost of insurance in this country anyway. You can't blame them for that either.
But if we had independent inspections during construction, the amount of defects that would emerge subsequently would be much less, and therefore the cost of insuring that would be less as well. So that's actually the root of the problem here, is we don't have independent. Sufficient independent inspection of building going on during construction. You go a couple of hundred miles north, and that's exactly what they have. They have independent inspections that are carried out effectively by the council, whereas here the vast bulk of the inspections are carried out by people contracted by the developer. So anyone who's too thorough in their investigations, if a developer doesn't want that approach, they're not going to hire them again. They're going to hire someone who's a bit less thorough. Obviously, the very best builders and developers build to the highest standard, and that isn't an issue, and they like to have their construction inspected thoroughly. But there is a segment of builders and developers that put things up quick, sell quick, and can be quite lax in terms of the building regulations and inspections. So the idea of not having it independent really leaves people in the lurch longer on. And if you think about it, you're buying a home is the biggest investment the vast majority of people are ever going to make in their lives. You know, it's often a home for life. And most of us, when it comes to buying a home, unless we have a background in construction or whatever, we're not going to be able to, look out for these sorts of things. And in any event, a lot of the defects are effectively covered up. You can only spot them, halfway through the build process. You can only see then the fire stopping isn't put in properly, or whatever the measure is. So you know, your average buyer doesn't have the wherewithal to be able to figure that out at the time of purchase. And unlike other kind of goods that you buy, if you go to the supermarket and you buy a flimsy product, you'll know and you won't go back the next week to buy it, whereas, you know, you're only buying a home once or possibly twice in your life if you're moving or whatever. So it absolutely relies on a kind of very strong independent regulation. That's what they do in other countries, and that's what we're still not doing here at all sufficiently, which does mean that these problems then are going to keep cropping up, and it does mean it creates a potential difficulty for government and liability for the taxpayer. I think it absolutely has to be addressed rather than us going around in circles in this.
Okay, and apart from fire safety, what kind of other structural defects have been found in these buildings?
An awful lot of them defects have emerged in the balconies, so they haven't been built properly. Sometimes water, they're not sealed properly, there's water egress. Sometimes there's timber in the balconies and it hasn't been sealed properly and that starts to rot. So that can be quite a common kind of defect. They're the kind of serious ones as well, because there's a structural safety issue there. So if the balcony is kind of added on and it's not structurally sound, you know, there's a safety implication there. So that's quite a common one. And then it's on the more serious end, yes, absolutely, being fire safety. So after that, I mean, there can be lapses or defects, but some of those can be easily corrected. You know, if there's a gap in insulation or whatever, they can sometimes be easily enough corrected at a low enough cost. So there is more minor defects, which, you know, aren't, you know, pleasant, I suppose, for, you know, homeowners and residents to deal with, but they're definitely on the less serious.
They can be rectified, yeah.
And at a lower cost as well, and they're not urgent to be rectified often. So, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Where exactly does the fault lie, Cian? Is it solely the developer or the local councillor, or perhaps both?
I think if you think of developers and, I suppose, how it's changed over the last number of decades and how you now have a lot more kind of large-scale developers in the market, and they can come from a few different backgrounds. So sometimes they can be small builders who scaled up, and when they were a small builder, they knew everything that was going on in their sites. They're directly involved in it. They were ensuring high quality, and then sometimes they scale up very, very fast. So they're contracting stuff out, so they don't really know what's going on their building site, and they're not ensuring control. And if they scaled up that fast, you know, they don't have enough kind of high quality middle management. So that can be part of it, you know. The other part of the equation is that a lot of the developers now can be people whose their main kind of objective and main thing that they're doing is raising finance, and they're spending most of their time on that, and that's what they're good at, and they're good at drawing down loans and getting investment and all of that. But effectively, what they aren't doing then is putting enough time and effort into building, you know, the building development side of it and the quality of it. So that's the situation with them, so it is.
Have the government proceeded with the recent recommendations made by the Oireachtas Housing Committee?
No, they haven't. They've been looking at it, but they haven't. What the minister has been saying here is that he knows there's a big problem, there's a big scale of the problem, and that he's afraid, you know, effectively not willing to take it on in terms of the liability of cause for the taxpayer. So he isn't coming up with a solution on this. I appreciate it's not an easy one to be solved, but it is something that they need to be doing. And you know, just because a problem is a big one to deal with, doesn't mean you don't get stuck in and find a solution and talk to the different actors in it.
All right. What legal rights of action do residents and homeowners have in relation to all of this? Do they have a right for a course of action against the developer?
They do in the first 10 years from when the homes are built, and that's the problem. It can often take maybe 5-6 years for problems to emerge, and it can take a few more years then for residents to get their head around it. And it can often be at around about 10 years where they're they've enough information, they realise the problem is widespread in estate or development, and then the statute of limitations kicks in and they're no longer able to take building control action against the developer. So that's the biggest difficulty, and the building control action would usually be taken by the council when they do get complaints from residents. So that's the situation with that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Moving on to our next topic, as major works are due to commence this summer at Howth Harbour, another serious problem relates to the significant amount of silt, and dredging of the harbour has now become urgent and is expected to begin, I think, in 2020. Tell us more about the background to this, Cian, the silt problem, and how serious it all is.
Yeah, well, it's been a problem for years, just in terms of... it's been building up, and it's causing a problem for fishing vessels, for people who use boats and yachts in the harbour for leisure purposes. And I mean, the same as any other kind of harbour, this can build up. So they have been campaigning for dredging of the harbour now for a good while. And I mean, it's very welcome news that the Department of the Marine are looking at this and are developing plans to dredge the harbour, which means continued use into the future will be guaranteed. And what they're looking to do is to take the silt and actually place it in an infill site, the west pier in Howth. So they're just at the beginning of that process. They're looking at maybe applying for planning permission towards the end of the year for that, and engaging with the local community and consulting with people in the meantime. So it's good for the harbour and everyone's using it, and I guess people locally will just want to see what's it going to look like, and what will the infill and the extended west pier, what use will that be put to? And the department again has been talking about how it could be used for more public space and having the plaza there. So that all sounds quite positive.
Okay, so it seems that any dredged material cannot be dumped at sea because it's contaminated, and then it's just not financially viable to dump it inwards either, because you'd be talking about 225,000 cubic metres of silt, which is roughly 300 lorry loads. So they're going to use it as an infill instead to the West Pier.
Yeah, it would be 20,000 to 30,000 lorry loads now. Even if that was taken away in a barge and brought somewhere, then you'd still have to replace it in a lorry and bring it to some sort of infill site or dump. So, yeah, I mean, the idea is to use it locally. And I guess, there could be a positive for the local community in the harbour by having that extra space in the West Pier as well. So, there is very good views from there, particularly in the evening when the sun sets. And actually, a lot of those views aren't kind of really... because there's buildings along the West Pier, they aren't really accessible to most people most of the time. So that infill could, and the new area created from it, could be a good kind of extra amenity for people. So, but we need to see what the plans look like, I suppose, until we know exactly what the situation's going to be.
I understand. However, the detailed plan is to dredge five key areas of the harbour. Would I be right? Which areas are those?
Yeah, so it's there's the marina that's used by the Howth Yacht Club. There's a kind of outer mooring section that's used by the Howth Boat Sailing and Boat Club. And then there's the area where on the East Pier where the trawlers, where the trawlers dock. So it would be those three areas, and then also two channels, approach channels. So it's not to dredge the entire harbour, I mean, because of the cost and the logistics and everything involved. So the areas of the harbour that aren't really used and are underutilised, they won't be dredged, whereas the key areas that aren't used will be.
Right, okay. We leave it at that, Cian. So unless there's anything else you'd like to add before we finish.
No, that's brilliant, Johnny. Thanks very much.
No, you're most
good
welcome.
Talking to you.
Yeah, likewise.
Okay.
Cian, thanks again for joining us today. All the best to you. Take care. And have a great weekend.
Thanks.
It's a long one.
You too.
All the best.
Thanks, bye. Thanks, bye.
Cheers. Now, that was Councillor Cian O'Callaghan, Social Democrats, talking about remediation fund needed for the Celtic Tiger building defects, and also about plans for dredging Howth Harbour.